Yo, it's Tuesday, November 8th. Today we're talking about Ford dealers banding together to push back. I remember that language somewhere else. Tech downsizing broadly, and how much will Turkey Day set you back this year? Everywhere I go, the people really want to know who I is and who I be. They stop and got my boy Michael Cirillo again.
Yo.
Filling out for the late, great Kyle Mounseer. Well, he's just the great Kyle Mounseer.
He's just the great. I was like, whoa.
But
where are we going?
Michael's hey, like,
how
didn't tell
often
me this.
Do you practice that intro?
Never.
Do you? Are you like, are you just that good of an MC now?
I don't know if it's that good of an MC, but I just rip it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I just like, I've really embraced the spirit of the freestylist, the freestyle hip hop artist. Okay. I want to be better at freestyling. So now we just hit the play button and then we just see whatever comes out, which sometimes is good. And at some point, I'm sure will help me lose my career very quickly.
So it reminds me of, have you ever heard of Harry Mack?
I feel
you
like,
gotta check out Harry Mack. He's a dude that freestyles and he'll go on Omegle and be like, hey, give me four random words and
people will pick out. I have heard about this guy.
And then he'll go for like 10 minutes and just go. And you're like, how does he do that?
It's a straight gift. You were kind of
giving me that vibe.
Okay, I'll take that.
The music's lined up here, like perfectly.
I'll take that. Well, we're gonna do that at some point, and I'll take that as a massive compliment. We are both about, we talked about this yesterday. You are not going anywhere next week. I'm about to be wheels up the end of this week. Kyle and I will be at the Modern Retail Conference in Palm Beach, Florida with a creative track. I think you could still go, even though they said tickets are sold out. If you want to go, I bet if you message me and we message Brian and Glenn, they might just let you in. But we're going to teach creative track there. A lot of our friends are also going to be out at Used Car Week coming up. We'll report on that as much as we can. But today, we got some news to talk about. Now, this first story is, we didn't include it in the show yesterday because I personally don't like starting the week on a conflict point. You know, and there's plenty of conflict. Why? Because that's what all the other news outlets do because it sells papes, man. So we didn't want to start on a conflict point. However, it is a very important story. And most of the people mentioned in the story of people that have been on an Isotu program at some point. So it's important to talk about. Dealer associations across the country are accusing Ford of overburdening their dealer body for breaking franchise laws. And are doing this in a joint letter from over 13 separate state associations in response to Ford's recent required investment of either $500,000 or about $1.2 million on facility upgrades, staff training, and new sales standards in order to sell EVs. So as a little refresher, the larger amount, the 1.2, involves putting, I think, two DC fast chargers, which just the chargers alone is about a $900,000 bill. One of them has to be public facing. I don't know who's going to a dealership to publicly like just charge your EV. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's go to the dealership when we could go to Starbucks. The other one, the lower tier, is $500,000. The lower amount, a dealer can only sell 25 EVs a year. So you put $500,000 and you can only sell 25 at the margins we tell you. And so several state associations, including John Devlin of the Pennsylvania Association, Don Hall of Virginia Association, Robert Glaser of the North Carolina Association, all signed the petition or provision, as well as sending a letter of their own to Ford. Ford obviously has paying a lot of attention to this. And Tim Hovick, chairman of their National Dealer Council, says the company was aware of the state association's positions and communicated that they're still able to make changes. Noting that the dealer council is on board. However, they did say, we wouldn't go as far as say to use the word supportive. He said initially there wasn't a second tier. They added a second tier in response, and they also included a second opt-in date out in 2027 that will allow dealers to opt in who want to sit it out for this first round to kind of see how it goes. He says, did we get it right? I don't know. But are we going to continue to work on it? Absolutely. So if you remember, the original deadline was October 31st, which Ford postponed till December 2nd. So it's coming up here in a few weeks to give them some more time to work on the program. So a lot of talk around this Ford deadline and these provisions. I mean, you have Ford clients. You know people who are Ford dealers. What are you hearing? What's the chatter, Cirillo?
You know what really grinds my gears?
That doesn't sound like an EV. We can't use that anymore. You know what really depletes my battery? Like, what are we going to say?
You know what really depletes my hydrogen / EV / diesel replaced battery?
What grinds your gears, Michael Cirillo?
Just how about communicate? Like, we've got billions, dare I say, near trillions of dollars floating through this industry every single year.
Couple bucks.
How about, like, look, here's where we're going. Here's, it's not going to happen overnight. So we're not going to try and strong arm you into it happening overnight. It reminds me of in Canada when Toyota was like, hey, dealers, you need to do the whole Scion thing. And I remember one of our Toyota clients, you know, I can't remember what it cost. It was, let's say $200,000-$300,000 back then to reface the building, yep. Put signage
separate
up,
showroom, right? The whole thing. Yeah.
2 months later, they're like, oops. So psych. Like, how about you instead of just dropping it on everyone? How about you, when are we going to start easing people into conversations and saying, here's what we're thinking about? Like maybe 4 years ago, 5 years ago, be like, we're thinking in this direction.
Yeah.
Start preparing. Here's what you can do to prepare. Cause like nothing ever happens overnight. And I feel like this type of thing, cause and effect. This is the type of reaction that you can expect, a strongly worded letter. And nothing, oh, more gratifying than a strongly worded letter, you know, to send the message, you know, shots fired across the bow. But I really just feel like, you know, Paul, like those shots didn't have to be fired in the first place. If we just put people around a table and said, hey, here's the direction we think we want to go. Here's where our brains are at. What do you guys think? Trusted dealer, partner, body. Let's not skirt around the issue. This is what we want. It's going to make everybody profitable. But here's how we see the path going. They didn't do that. Here you go. That's why you have all these dealer associations saying, oh, nay, nay.
Oh, nay. it's like the quintessential problem in a dysfunctional relationship. And I feel like whenever something, you know, terrible happens, like divorce, all of a sudden everybody starts, as soon as you lawyer up, right? Everyone just assumes the other person at their worst because they're playing defense at the point, right? Dealer associations are playing defense. Ford's playing defense. And it makes it very difficult to have productive conversations when it happens like that. Now, I do think that kind of the quick rise of EVs in the popular culture that has been accelerated by the pandemic, I think what has happened is like everyone, this is too strong of a phrase, but that you never waste a good crisis, right? Politicians use that, right? This is an opportunity to move the ball forward. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I feel like this has been an opportunity with all the supply shortages, the dealers' reliance on the OEMs realizing like, hey, this can be really profitable if we kind of got a reset button that we can manage our business in this way. I feel like all of that, you know, has led some OEMs like Ford to be more aggressive in the EV rollout because they feel like they can push the ball forward. Now, I do think that, you know, I think that Jim Farley's plan for an EV future, like, really does have the consumer in mind, which is a good place to start. Right. I really feel like that. Right. And then like what happens in the middle, you know, our belief is that the dealer is the most effective and efficient and the best way to sell and service vehicles to serve the communities. And we feel like that all works together. Like it's just this mushy middle, right? You look at an OEM like Toyota and the way they've handled EV and they've just built a lot of trust. I mean, your Scion story aside, they're not doing that again. Right. Toyota has built a lot of trust with their dealers where dealers are like, okay. Yeah. You know, much more measured approach. And even yesterday we talked about them saying like, we're taking a very humble approach to this because we don't know what's going to happen. And frankly, we don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. And they're right. So, I mean, December 2nd's coming. So this is going to have to be sorted in a few weeks. I would be very surprised if we didn't see some more legal action come from this. And it's not just fighting it at a federal level, right? Like there are 52 battles that have to happen. So, you know, my hope is that, everybody kind of we're able to work this out in a way that doesn't, when the dealers are focusing on this, guess what they're not focusing on?
Yeah, 100%.
Customer experience.
And it, you know, honestly, it just makes me so much more appreciative of how boring my life is. Like you showed up and picked a fight with 52 state associations.
Oh, man.
You know, and you're like, well, we'll see what happens. It's like, bro, you're not enjoying Christmas this year. I hate to say it.
I'm not. And if you are, you got ice in your veins and you're probably not much fun to be around anyway.
Exactly.
Speaking of not being around anyway.
Stop. Segway.
Time.
He's on a segue.
There. Elon Musk's Twitter layoffs apparently were not an isolated event as the tech startup sectors ready themselves for broader layoffs as economic conditions are considering, I can't read my own writing, as economic conditions change and hiring policies need to change to be more competitive and profitable. So here's basically what it is. The Fed has announced their intention to raise borrowing rates to more than 4%, which is substantially changing the way businesses borrow money. To give you a comparison, to March 2020, that rate was 0.25%. So what that means is access to cheap money. Businesses can hire a lot faster and borrow money to hire, because if you think about it, it's a lot easier to get an ROI on that money you borrowed at 0.25% than the money you borrow at 4%. So it really is changing the game. Obviously, consumer spending sentiment, the overall economy is changing as well. Inflation. So look at it this way. Twitter was acquired for $44 billion and hasn't been profitable, Michael. It hasn't been profitable in 8 years. Like, for real? I pay attention pretty closely, but I didn't realize it's been 8 years not profitable. And if you think about it, they really haven't introduced anything new either.
Elon said in one of his tweets this past week that it was either $2 or $4 million a day that they're losing.
$4 million.
Like, I know you're sending people to space and you want to go to Mars.
But how long can you take that $4 million drain, right?
Yeah, like, just, oh, there, another 4 million. Oh, another 4 million. So I get that. There's a lot of, like, you know, obviously you go on Twitter these days and you see a lot of people complaining about, oh, they let us all go. It's like, why are you comfortable? Just to kind of join the conversation, why are you comfortable working for a company that's losing 4 million a day?
Well, because they came into a company that was losing 4 million a day, probably.
Yeah, no.
And I'm it out. Was, you know, it's... People don't, like, look, let's face it. When you get a job at a company like that, you're really not watching the P&L. You're not, right? You're just based on the growth trajectory or the public rhetoric. And so the employees were, we'll talk about how they were let go another day. I think it's like, I understand why they did it. They just basically, people went to log into their stuff and they couldn't anymore. But I feel like there was a more human way to do that, right? Not like let them know before you shut off access, right? That is just typically how it works at any company anywhere. But there's definitely still some,
you know, who's getting rich in Q4, Paul? Lawyers.
Oh,
lawyers are getting rich in Q4.
Well, and Q3 and Q2 and Q1. But here's a kind of a nice ending, a soft landing that I saw today, is that all the employees were given 3 months of severance, which is actually twice the norm, or twice the legal level, which is 6 weeks is what the requirement was. So it's nice to give them some time to land on their feet. I've seen a lot of companies reaching out publicly saying, like, hey, Twitter employees, come here. In an interesting turn, former CEO and founder Jack Dorsey took ownership of the layoffs, tweeting, "I own the responsibility for why everyone is in this situation. I grew the company size too quickly, and I apologize for that."
Wow.
That's a pretty boss move.
That is boss. I mean,
because that's the real reason they needed the layoffs, right? Like, fresh eyes came in and said, whoa, hold on. Like, this is a company that doesn't need 8,000 people. We need 4,000 people.
Yeah, Elon came into it basically buying a $10 In-N-Out burger meal for $47 and was like
53 to be exact.
He's like, maybe that wasn't the right thing to do. Maybe I just made a really bad deal.
Yeah.
It makes sense to me.
And so, like, the real point of this story is that it's not an isolated thing. Meta has also announced that they are going to have large scale, in their words, layoffs, and they could be the biggest this year so far of any tech company. And it would be the first broad layoffs that Meta has ever embarked on in its 18 years of being in business. The last earnings call just showed that they've invested, I think it was like $16 billion in the metaverse, putting a big bet on what things were going to go on. Zuckerberg still says, he's like, I think in history, when people look back at this point, they're going to acknowledge the meaningful work we're doing here. But as far as shareholders are concerned, stock price, and any level of adoption of the metaverse, we're not seeing it. And then, you know what happens when economic times are tough? People start pulling back on everything. People spend time where they are most comfortable spending time. And the metaverse is just kind of a couple levels from there. And so it's looking like we're going to see more of these. You know, Facebook and Meta are kind of just a litmus test for the rest of the industry.
I just, you know, maybe I'm getting to that age, dude, but ever since you and Paul were talking about getting scooters to roll into a SoDoCon in September.
Scoogatties.
Yeah, yeah, we got were. I was like, I'm going to buy one of those. And I straight up bought a scooter that goes 32 miles per hour.
Dude, does it really go 32?
Yeah, I've had it at 32 miles per hour.
Dude, 32 is real fast on a scooter.
Real fast. It hauls. Now, the whole point being is the pleasure that actually brings me, getting the wind in my face, mm-hmm. going around the neighborhood, having fun with the kids. I don't want to do that. Putting on a, oh, this is so good. Hey, Dallin, blow on my face. You know, there's just there's a point, visceral and I can nature. Understand.
Yeah.
There are some tangible applications for learning and things like it. I totally get it. But then when it comes to when times get tough, to your point, what do I have left? I have the fact that there's air in my lungs and I can go create experiences on the real face of the planet. By the way, has anyone paused to think about for a minute the fact that we walk on the face of a planet that floats through the universe?
Wow, we're getting really esoteric today. This.
Oh, the moon? No. I'm bored with that big space rock that, controls gravity. I'm going to put these blinders on.
Well, I think Elon Musk, for one, considers that quite often, which is why he's figuring out ways to get off of it. But yeah, it is tough.
True.
It is tough to realize a world. Look, it's a lot easier to imagine and embrace and adopt a metaverse world when we're all locked down from COVID. Right? If you think about that, when that happens, you're like, oh, it would be pretty nice to go hang out at the Eiffel Tower with my friends and watch our favorite rock band. Right?
Yeah.
But when the real world is open, not so much. So what does this mean for dealers and the auto industry? I think it means a couple things. Number one, the reminder that dealerships are great places to work. They're stable. They offer community. They offer great pay. There's no ceiling and there's also no floor. So championing those things is a great thing to do in your marketing, in your messaging, in your brand, your community service, et cetera. Also, I bet there's some really smart people that we may be able to lure into automotive from the tech side Michael, you, myself, Kyle, lots of others always talk about we need outside automotive people to come mm-hmm. inside automotive people. And let me just say, Bob Lanham used to be Meta Bob, now is Bob Now. He has one of the best senses of timing I've ever seen in my life.
He's a genius. Dare we call him a genius? He is one.
We can call him a genius. We can call him a genius. Well, I'm trying to think of a good segue for this next segment before we're out, but I can't. So speaking of how much Thanksgiving Day dinner is going to cost.
Stop.
Segue. Why not? Every once in a while, we just mail in a cheap one. So you can expect Thanksgiving food prices to be around, is going to be higher or lower? Of course, higher. 13.5% higher than they were in 2021. According to data company IRI, with the average cost per person raising to over $60 a person. Is that accurate in these show notes?
No.
That can't be. It's probably $6 per person is my guess.
We're having hungry, man. For
$60 a person. We're going out for that.
Yeah.
Get this, the avian flu's effect on turkey prices and a turkey shortage. I didn't know there's a turkey shortage.
Of course.
The traditional main dish is expected to cost $1.99 a pound compared to $1.15 a pound on average. The cost of sides, like the mac and cheese and the mashed potatoes and all that, sweet potatoes, 18.8%, and pies alone are 20% higher. Some relief, though, is in sight as Walmart, this is a great announcement. I love Walmart for doing this. They announced they will offer Thanksgiving staples at 2021 prices. And Aldi is rolling prices all the way back to 2019. So, it all says, the article says there'll be 7.4 people at the Thanksgiving table this year. But Gen Z and younger millennials are expected to host 9.8 guests, while seniors and retirees, only 6 people. So, okay, no real surprise here. Things are going to be more expensive. Why? Because things are more expensive everywhere. Why? Inflation. Mm-hmm. However, it's pretty cool that Walmart and Aldi are taking, because look, when you go to buy your Thanksgiving dinner staples, you don't buy just those things, right? You buy everything else.
No.
So, yeah. Like a Scugatti. I have a really important question before we finish this out.
Okay.
What's Thanksgiving like in Canada? Because you're in Texas now. I don't know what Texas Thanksgiving is like. Well, is it like steak? Like full rack of ribs?
No, turkey. It's all the same stuff.
But you gotta shoot it yourself. Yeah.
Like I don't know if you have a younger brother or not, but growing up, your younger brother, like younger siblings want to be like their older sibling. And I consider Canada kind of like the younger sibling to America.
Okay.
Where it's like, what do they do? Oh, they do turkey and stuffing and size. Okay, we'll do that too. You know, like, so it's pretty much the same exact thing. Okay. It's also, fun fact, it's similar in the sense that it's also the dinner that you can expect uncles to start fighting with one another. Clear out the furniture. They're at it.
It's a world star.
We got a Patriots
world
fan
star
and a
dream
Cowboys
come true.
Fan.
How many people are you going to have around your Thanksgiving table this year? Do you know?
What's that?
How many people are going to be around your Thanksgiving table this year?
There will be five.
Five. Okay.
Including me.
Okay. Yep. So it's a small family affair. We're going to have like 40. My wife's like inviting the whole side of the family. So that's going to be
here's the reason why we celebrated Canadian Thanksgiving and all of the friends we've met in our neighborhood. We were like, they're like, you're Canadian. That's so cool. And we're like, fun fact, it's Thanksgiving. They're like, we should do a thing. So we had 40 families.
When was that?
All gather. That was October, the second Monday in October.
Wow.
We had 40 families all gathered.
So you
together.
Deserve a break.
Yeah. This one we might do ribs.
Yeah, you should. You should. Hey, and it's really cool to see Gen Z and younger millennials really leaning into the Thanksgiving thing. You know, there's that whole Thanksgiving, Friendsgiving. I'm not sure when that started, but it was a few years ago. So it's good. It's good. Regardless of the price, it's good to see people putting priorities in the right place, which is community. We hope you go out there on this Tuesday, cultivate community, because I'll tell you what, that is the one thing that will be around far beyond any electric vehicle. You can quote me on that.